Scoop. About our oil addiction. We didn't used to talk about it. In fact, when Jimmy Carter first launched in the 1970s, people thought he was a little loopy. Weed's proposals then, and we went back into relying on oil into the 80s and the 90s. That our oil addiction is costly, not just in terms of money, but in terms of policy. We also know that oil causes global warming, that burning
This is the Quality News Network. General Petraeus said in Iraq today that it was critical that alienated groups be brought into talks. He also said he believed violence could be curtailed. Secretary Robert Gates announced the troop surge now underway in Iraq will be supplemented by an additional 250 military police. Gates says the extra MPs will assist forces dealing with an anticipated increase in insurgent arrests. House Democrats, however, have proposed legislation requiring all U.S. troops leave Iraq by August of next year. Leaders on both sides of the House are proposing the addition of $1.7 billion to the Iraq War Appropriations Bill for medical care and rehabilitation for wounded troops. The U.N. Atomic Watchdog Agency approved major cuts in aid to Iran today as part of sanctions over suspicions that Iran is trying to build a nuclear bomb. Iran shrugged off the punitive action and showed no signs it was cowed by the possibility of even tougher sanctions. A former Iranian defense minister who likely has important Iranian secrets has disappeared from a hotel in Istanbul. Sources say there is a possibility that he is now cooperating with Western intelligence. Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams and the Democratic Unionist leader Ian Paisley, along with his deputy Peter Robinson, were the first to win easy re-election in Northern Ireland today. At stake is the central dream of 1998's Good Friday Peace Accord. The U.S. Coast Guard is staging a huge exercise in Florida in preparation for a possible mass exodus from Cuba in the event of the death of Fidel. President Bush launches a trip to Latin America today. This week he announced an increase in humanitarian aid funding to the region. In Mogadishu, at least 12 people were killed today in clashes between African Union troops and Islamic rebels. A former U.S. Navy sailor has been arrested on spying charges related to his assistance to a radical Islamic group 6 years ago. The death toll in Indonesia's 6.3 earthquake earlier this week has risen to 73. More than 430 remain hospitalized. Hundreds have been left homeless. Today is International Women's Day. Commemorations and conciliatory gestures are taking place around the world. In Iran, 28 women were released on bail. In Algeria, all women prisoners had their sentences cut by 12 months. In Turkey, 31 women were jailed for shouting slogans. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business and science are next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge and the Cypress Inn appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to with classical renditions of jazz and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
Scientists finally know why blue whales sing. Findings from a study by the Scripps Institute of Oceanography in La Jolla indicate individual vocalizations are used by feeding whales, no other of their locations. Oceanographers have also discovered that blue whales sing in 9 distinct dialects depending on where they live. Free trade talks resume today between the U.S. and South Korea. The head American negotiator expressed optimism about the outcome. Government regulators in the U.S. and Canada have approved the first joint NAFTA product label. Now farmers will be able to buy commercial herbicides cheaper in Canada. After many decades of struggle to do so, Communist China has unveiled a landmark law that will boost the protection of private property rights. Chinese lawmakers are saying that the country's economic and social changes made the proposed legislation necessary. Visiting U.S. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson told the same Shanghai audience that reforms are needed to open China's banking system to foreign investment. Weekly gains were paired in today's session on Wall Street as investors turned their attention to Friday's monthly unemployment report. Gold closed at $6.52 an ounce, and silver was at $13.50 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.59 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close, the Dow was up 49 points at 12,241. The NASDAQ was up 11 at 2385, and the S&P 500 was up 9. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
All right, people, all right. Welcome aboard a very, very different show today. Nothing green, nothing environmental today. Last night, Gail and I were, watching telly and flipped over to Late Line, and we caught this interview that we had not seen any promos for whatsoever, and I knew that this had to be today's show. Now, last night on the ABC's Late Line, which you can find the video and the transcript at abc.net.au/late line, and Tony Jones interviewed a young American soldier, Joshua Key, who has deserted and is in Canada attempting to get, refugee status at the moment. And he is releasing a book detailing the activities of U.S. troops in Iraq and the horrors that they are committing under the orders of this administration. And this young man is, I think, as brave as they get. He's obviously facing huge amounts of jail time if he ends up being extradited back, but he laid out some really horrific things. Now, yesterday, I played a track, in honor of the Vietnam vets, and I made the comment that, I'm so glad that the pro peace movement has learned since Vietnam to not go after the troops, but those who give them their orders. And I've got the audio from the entire interview from last night, and this will take up a good portion of the show. And I just want you all to sit back and listen to Tony Jones, because I don't know if anyone's heard about this guy in the States, and I would doubt, and I would put money on it, that he would never get this kind of an opportunity without being absolutely torn to shreds by right-wing nut jobs and apologists like he got on ABC television last night. And I want this book. I was just horrified, but yet not surprised. It's one of these situations where what this gentleman describes is everything we feared most going on in Iraq. And I can't even describe how just horrific this is. And I mean, even Tony Jones is just blown away by this young man's accounts. And he goes into fairly specific detail about things that he was involved in doing, the things that he was told to do, and when he questioned or asked if there were reports made on some of these incidents, he was told things like, "It's none of your concern. It's not your job." And when we get this, like I said, this interview is going to take a fair amount of time, and we're not going to start it until after we get through. We'll start the whole thing after our first break today. But we also, today's track of the day, I hope, is then a little bit of an antidote to what you're going to have to stomach with this interview. And I'm telling you, I am so unbelievably just appalled, but yet not surprised. Now, at this moment, there are 35 U.S. military personnel in Canada who have deserted. I don't know if this is a well-known fact, who are all applying for refugee status. And as this young man says, he believes he should not be, you know, held to any kind of a criminal judgment because he has done what was morally right. And it's just, you know, and you can find the links to all this at on today's show post at headonradionetwork.com. So we're gonna hold the phone lines closed for a while because, like I said, this is gonna take a little time. I want to cover this. I just want you to hear the audio in its entirety, and then after that you can go and see the transcript's not quite up yet. Probably happen in the next few hours, and there the video is streamable. And there is also a video podcast of this program available if you'd like. And once you've heard this, all I ask is that you make sure that every one of your representatives knows about this young man and his book. I want you to go to your local press, your local papers. I think, just like Aaron Watata, this is a story that needs to be told. So for the moment, I think we're going to, if it's all right, Agnes, let's go take our break a little bit early. And we're going to come back and just go straight into this audio because, like I said, I really don't know, and I seriously doubt that this young man would get this kind of time to speak his case in the American media or the British media, and with the things that Seymour Hersh has come out with, that, you know, where U.S. funds have gotten to Al-Qaeda in shades of Iran-Contra. This entire debacle in Iraq is a crime in itself. Most of you listening to this program would know. And so just, you know, pour yourself a drink. Spin one up. Whatever it is that you got to do to keep your sanity. And just hang on with us through this break. And when we come back, we're going to go straight to this audio with Mr. Joshua Key. And you're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Divine. The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit HelpMakeADifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Imagine there's no heaven. All right, everybody, welcome back to Boxed Up here on a very, very different program today. Boxed Up is showing its anti-war, pro-peace colors today. And we're going to play this interview from Mr. Joshua Key last night on ABC's Late Line. You can find the video and soon the transcript at abc.net.au/Late Line. And this is Tony Jones with American Deserter in Canada, Joshua Key. Roll it, Agnes.
Well, now to our interview, and despite growing U.S. opposition to the war in Iraq, the troop surge in Baghdad continues. Today, the commander of American forces in Iraq has recommended that heightened troop levels be maintained for at least another year. Meanwhile, the American public has been asking exactly how things went so wrong. Well, the story of one individual soldier can only provide clues rather than answers. But Joshua Key's book, The Deserter's Tale, still makes for sobering reading. The book details basic training techniques in which, if the author is to be believed, Iraqis, Afghanis, and all Muslims, in fact, are systematically demonized. Key was just a private soldier, but he examines his own reactions to Iraqi civilians and those of his fellow soldiers during his tour of duty and concludes that American soldiers were behaving like terrorists. It's a staggering conclusion, and we should bear in mind that Joshua Keyes is still seeking asylum in Canada, having deserted the army rather than return to Iraq. Well, it's impossible for us to verify key elements of his account, but you can judge his authenticity for yourself. I spoke to him in Toronto earlier today. Joshua Key, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Why did you get involved in writing this book in the first place?
I would say for the main purpose of it was to get my story out, for it to be heard, and for everyone to hear it.
You know, I'm sure, what the consequences will be. Some people will regard you as a hero, but your critics are going to say that you're a traitor.
Well, of course, you're going to have that anyways, of course. I look at that, I'm not a coward, or nor am I a traitor. I went and fought for my country. The only reason I left, of course, was the things I witnessed, and that's what I made my decision on, and to me it was a moral decision, and so I don't believe myself in being that.
We'll talk about some of the details in a moment, but first let me take you back to your account of basic training, because it's here you argue that your minds were poisoned. Could you describe it to us, just how you were taught, what people were saying to you about Iraqis and Muslims?
You know, that of course, they were never called Iraqis or Muslims. You know, they were always used in derogatory terms as Hajis, Habibs, and so on. I would say that it was definitely for a dehumanizing. I mean, if you see something, you hear it in that effect all the time. I mean, they were never referred to as civilians or Iraqis or Muslims.
You say of the training that you were told that all Muslims were terrorists, that all Muslims were responsible for September 11. Were people actually saying that to you specifically?
You know, I yes, and then I got it to the term that, you know, it's instead of being, what would you say, not guilty until proven, you know, until proven guilty, I would say that, you know, to us it was they're guilty until proven innocent. And it's to us all Muslims were terrorists. That's the way that we were taught, and that's the way we conducted our business.
You say it's the way you conducted business. Did you actually see soldiers in Iraq behaving as if they actually believed this?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I mean, it was, you know, even in our actions, from raiding homes to traffic control points to everyday, I would say, maneuvers in Iraq. I mean, it was very systematic. You know, it was never referred as civilians or people. I mean, it was always, you know, derogatory terms, always something, always to dehumanize them, to put them beneath us.
Did you see or feel this in your own behavior?
Of course, in my own behavior at first, I would know I seen it and I did it. I mean, you know, of course I changed after the months went, but no, at first I was one of them. So, I mean, that's the, yes.
Did you abuse Iraqi civilians yourself?
Yes, I did, yes.
Now, of the numerous raids and other incidents that you participated in, you've written, "It struck me that the American soldiers themselves were the terrorists." Now, people back home, your own family, are going to be horrified to hear you say that.
Well, I'm sure they will be. You know, but the way I look at that was the truth. You know, we had no justification after all them homes that I raided. There was no justification. You know, I felt that we was more antagonizing, causing it, you know, into my picture, to myself. You know, we had become the terrorists. I wasn't getting terrorized. I was more of doing the terrorizing.
In what regard? What do you mean by that?
You know, from raiding a home, taking the sons and their husbands, you know, if they're over 5 foot tall, they were sent off, regardless if anything was found in that house or not. Through everyday night raids, of course, illumination rounds through the rounds all night long, complete patrolling of the streets nonstop. It was more of antagonizing. When we would go out on a patrol, it's not that we were, you know, saying derogatory names even to the Iraqi women. I mean, it was, we antagonized. We, you know, we brought it, we made it the way it was.
Now, you were in some of the worst fighting in Fallujah, and you claim to have seen at least 14 civilians killed. Can you tell us about the circumstances?
For one of the incidences, it was we were at a mayor's cell, which is sort of where you're, I guess you would say, like the mayor of the city stayed. I was on the back part. I wasn't at the front, so I didn't see the exact action, but of course I seen the after effect of it. And that was, the ground was, you know, outrageous amount of gunfire. Of course, we was getting ready ourselves. It came over the radio that, you know, that something in the front was happening. I guess the overall circumstances of it was the end result was 12 Iraqi civilians were killed. The reason why is because somebody had gotten trigger happy. And that was one of my first incidences with death there, of course, is that. And, I mean, it was apparent very, 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 very the first day we got into Iraq that if you felt threatened, you shoot. You ask questions later. Our actions were completely unsupervised, and we did as we will. And just as well as in 12 Iraqis, there was no reason for them to be dead. I mean, somebody got trigger happy, there's death.
When civilians were killed, what happened? Did your officers make reports? Did they try and investigate what had happened?
I myself never got questioned. In the course of my ranking, I had no idea what my commanding officers were doing, if anything was wrote or not. I know on many of the circumstances that I witnessed myself in Iraq, I asked later on if any mission statements have been written. You know, have anything been written about what happened last night? And I was told on many occasions that it was none of my concern and none of my business.
One of the most horrific incidents you record was in the night during a raid in Ramadi, and you described the circumstances with one of your sergeants actually saying, "Tonight is retaliation time in Ramadi." Tell us about that incident.
Well, it was, we had many, you know, for that incident, you know, for the retaliation, prior to that there had been a commander in the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment, which is the regiment I was with, that had gotten injured. I don't know exactly, I don't even know if it was a fatality. But that was said after that fact. I mean, in Ramadi the second time, there were so many incidences, of course. The one, you know, you're on a QRF mission, which it's like you're the quick reaction force for the military. It's like you're like a SWAT team. For that 24-hour period, you're in control. I mean, if anything happens within that city, then you're sent out to what would you say, calm down the uprising. The night that we got the call, we were on it. We were going to our designated spot. We took a sharp right turn by the banks of the Euphrates River. On the left side, I seen bodies that were decapitated. My track stopped. I was asked to, see if there... I was, of course, the lowest ranking, so I was told to get out and see if I could find evidence of a firefight, which means, shell casings. When I got out of the back of my track, I heard one American soldier screaming that we had lost it. I heard, I looked to the other side. I seen American soldiers kicking the head around like a soccer ball. I got back inside of my APC, which is an armored personnel carrier. Said I wouldn't have no involvement. Of course, the next day I asked if anything had been filed for that, and because to me that was completely unacceptable. And that's when I say that's when my will started to change, of course.
I have to get you to go back over that because of the way you just described it. Are you saying you saw American soldiers kicking around the decapitated head of a dead Iraqi?
Yes, that was... Of course, I live with that nightmare every day. That's something I have a lot of problems with, of course. But it was, to me, that was completely, there's no justification and no reason why that should have happened like that. There's no reason, it only takes one shot to kill a person, even if it was for that standpoint. But there's no reason whatsoever to decapitate a human person by means of gunfire.
Were these people civilians? Or were they insurgents? Was there any evidence that they were armed?
No, no evidence whatsoever. To me, they were civilians.
It's such an horrific scene that many Americans are going to believe that you've invented this for your book.
Oh, I'm sure they will, but then the way I look at that is every day there's other soldiers coming out with facts just like mine, from their own personal experiences. I mean, it's just a matter of time until it all comes out. I'm not the first one, of course, nor am I going to be the last one to say that these atrocities are happening. What's happening there will be dealt with later on. So, I mean...
In your account of that incident, you include the names and details of members of your platoon, including a sergeant and a staff sergeant. Will any of those people back up your account?
I don't know that, right? I mean, it depends on how do they look at the war now, of course, since they've been out. Of course, they're going to see me as a total, whatever you might want to call it. But they're going to see me as a lot different since I deserted, of course. And I don't know where they stand. I would say a lot of soldiers come back, and they, of course, have they come to their conscience. So I would say that it'll be reported. I hope that it will be. If not, I seen it, and it's my facts.
Now, if it's true what you saw was a war crime, would you be willing to give sworn evidence about that before a court or a tribunal?
Oh, well, of course. I mean, that's involved, and of course I would.
Joshua Key, the victims you describe were not all adults. You also graphically describe the killing of a very young Iraqi girl. Can you tell us that story?
Yes, I was pulling guard on a Ramadi Children's Hospital. I did for many, many times. On one same position, because you would always change your position every so many hours. On the one side, there was a house adjacent to the fence, and there was a seven, 8-year-old girl. She would always run over Mr. Food, Mr. Water. Well, of course, after a short number of times I gave in to her, I would give her my MREs, I would give her my water. To me, it was a kind face. It was a smile. I didn't have no idea what she was saying. She herself would bring me bread, would bring me water. You know, and then that continued, and until one day, you know, she's just like normal. She's coming across the street to get her MRE and her water, and then her, you know, the way I look at it, I heard a shot and her head exploded like a mushroom. To me, that shot, you know, after being in war, of course, and I would say anyone could say it who's been there, there's a definite distinction between an AK-47 shot and an M-16 shot, and to me, it was an M-16 shot.
One of your own men shot her, is that what you're saying?
You know, I don't know for sure, of course, but, you know, that's my speculation, yes.
Could there have been any other reason for an accidental shooting? Did she suddenly appear? Could she have appeared somehow to be a danger to your troops?
I wouldn't think so, not for how many times. I mean, there was other soldiers in my squad that gave her food as well, so I could not see there being, you know, somebody seeing a danger or a threat in her, no.
What happened to her body? What happened after she was shot?
Her mother came, some other family, and I don't know what happened to it afterwards. I don't know what happened with her.
You saw her body collected there?
Yes, yes.
Was her death reported?
I do not know again. I mean, you know, I look at that, and I mean, and out of complete honesty, I was a PFC. I did not have no idea what was going on or what missions were filed, what things had happened, what was told. I do not know.
What did these kind of incidents that you witnessed or took part in, what did they do to your effectiveness as a soldier?
It made me devastated. I mean, you know, it was, it's one thing to go to another country and fight for democracy and to bring freedom, to rid weapons of mass destruction and rid the world of the evil tyrant Saddam Hussein. That's one thing, rather than going to a country for you don't know what reasons, committing the atrocities and the acts that we were doing with no justification whatsoever. I mean, I live with the effects of that every day. You know, it's, if it was a justified and illegal war with reason, I would still be there today. I left because there was no reason, unjustified, illegal, and immoral to myself.
Now, you're one of 35 U.S. deserters trying to convince the Canadian government to treat you as if you were refugees. What would happen if you were sent back to the U.S.?
Of course, I've heard many different things. I couldn't tell you the truth because, of course, I haven't been sent back. But the last I was told is up to 5 years in prison. You know, that is, even one day in prison, no one should have to spend one day in jail for doing the right and moral thing, especially when 95% of the world knows we are. It's just the other five. That shouldn't happen. No one should have to.
Are you in contact with some of those Vietnam deserters who also went to Canada decades ago?
Yes, I'm in contact with...
What do they say to you?
Well, you know, I've heard many times, you know, that it wasn't like a ball game for the first few that came. You know, they had to fight for their right to stay here as well. And, of course, the provision was given afterwards. The way I look at it is still today, you know, I will fight and fight and fight until, you know, I'm not asking for refugee status. You know, I am in one hand, but I'm not. I would much rather have a provision for all of us to stay so that every single soldier that comes here does not have to go through this. They shouldn't have to, and we should, you know, obligations, international law obligations, we should be allowed to stay in Canada.
Now, in the very last line of your book, you say that you will never apologize for deserting. And finally, you say this: I owe one apology only, that's to the people of Iraq. Why did you say that?
Because that's where my apology, you know, if my apologies go, you know, I apologize for raiding their homes. I apologize for doing the things I did for any sense of anything I did there, from stealing from them. I am completely. But as far as being to the U.S. government, no, because they lied, they falsified, and they're the one that put us all there. So, you know, no. I apologize, and I apologize to one, and that's the Iraqi people.
Joshua Key, we'll have to leave you there. We thank you very much for taking the time to come and talk to us.
No, thank you.
Okay. Picking and decapitated by gunfire. Iraqi head like a soccer ball. Taking a young girl out with an M16 who was known to the soldiers. I mean, this to me, this is, you know, absolutely everything worst case scenario that anyone could have even imagined. If this all pans out to be true, and I have the tendency to believe this young man, so we've overrun the break a little bit just so that we didn't have to interrupt that audio. And like I said, please spread this around. I'm going to see if I can download the video and get it up on the Horn a little bit later. Try and upload it to our YouTube if we can. And, I hope that this gets investigated. You know, I hope, God, I just hope. So we're going to take a late break here. You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going to come back with hopefully a little bit of therapy with today's track of the day. We'll see you in a minute.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
We're gonna do the track of the day, and we'll, you know, we're just gonna lose the last break, and after the track of the day, we'll just come straight on back to me to close out the show. But I figured this would be very, very appropriate for today. Now, I've played a few tracks off of the A Perfect Circle Emotive album. That's where that really great cover of Imagine came from, and Fiddle in the Drum. Well, again, in the same vein, which that whole record is, which are just all these great covers of songs of statement, I guess you could say. They covered, and this is a really wonderful cover. I think I like this better than the original, but they covered Depeche Mode of all bands, People Are People, and. You know, this track just, to me, speaks of where we are in today's so-called war on terror and all these other things that we just don't really look at. You know, why do we hate each other so much? You know, I just don't get it, and I know a lot of you don't get it. And it's insane. It's just absolutely so insane. So, you know, without further ado, A Perfect Circle covering Depeche Mode, People Are People. Roll it, Agnes.
understand what makes a man hate another man. Help me understand. I can't understand what makes a man hate another man. Help me understand. I can't understand what makes a man.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Vlad, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's go. Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady?
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here for, Friday morning here. It's Thursday where you are, and if you heard that interview audio, you'll be just kind of spun out like I am. I mean, I'm just disgusted that, you know, people who, you know, have signed off their lives with the ideals of defending a nation are sent off to do this stuff. You know? And I really hope that things like the decision against Scooter Libby, you know, starts to turn the investigative eye on this administration, because these are just heartless, death-loving bastards. But they're too wimpy, too weak, too scared to actually do it themselves. So they send good men and women over to do their dirty work, and I find it horrific. And it makes me extremely extremely angry and sad. And, you know, what is this? What, you know, gentlemen like this, you know, Joshua, you know, I mean, what is this guy going to have to live with for the rest of his life? You know, do you reckon that he's going to be, you know, awakened by the nightmares of that little girl's head being blowing up like a mushroom? Or the head of a decapitated Iraqi man being kicked around like a soccer ball? And they say we're trying to win the hearts and minds of the Iraqis. Please. It's just nonsense. It's criminal. And George W. Bush, the big Dick Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, all of them should be tried at The Hague or some other international war crimes court. And I reckon Tony Blair and Johnny Howard should be strung up by their short and curlies as well. It astounds me. You know, we're supposed to be in a modern, we're supposed to live in a modern world. This is barbaric. And the only way you can get good people to do this kind of thing is to absolutely desensitize and to program them to think of other human beings as being subhuman. It's amazing. You know, and I don't know if you caught it in the interview, but there was that one little factoid that comes out that when they're raiding Iraqi homes, any male over 5 foot tall is detained and taken away, regardless of anything, if there was anything found to support an insurgency or any other kind of thing in the home. Don't have to find anything. All you have to do is be one of them and be over 5 foot tall. I mean, I broke 5 foot tall at a pretty young age. I'm just appalled. And I believe the book is called A Soldier's Tale. And I want to find this book. I wonder if it'll even get released in the States. And I would like to know if anyone who's listening to the program has actually heard this young man's story before and can point me to any U.S. media that has actually covered this, given this young man any camera time. I'd like to know, because at the moment I think I would tend to believe, and this would be just my assumption, that there has been nothing about this, you know, and just like in Vietnam, this may be the thing that finally breaks this insanity, is when the soldiers begin to just fight back against those that give them illegal orders and say, I'm not doing it. Like Aaron Watata and others. And right now, there are 35 by current count. By every single count, you know, by any count that I've heard, 35 deserters right now in Canada fighting for their own survival. Because I would really fear what would happen to these guys, especially if they're stating these things. You know, these are the type of people that I fear that they could disappear. So, all right, folks, with that, I know this was a difficult show, but I thought it was just so important that you all heard this. And please, please, email, blog this thing everywhere, your MySpace, wherever you can. Get this out. And if you can, email the ABC, abc.net.au, and tell them, you know, that you know, thank them for getting this out, because I think there are very few media outlets that would do this, especially mainstream ones. And thank you to Tony Jones and the producers of Late Line for taking the risk to do this, because this is what these are the stories that need to be told. And this audio is with the home studio. Any of the rest of the hosts who want to utilize this audio, please feel free. I just think that this is so unbelievably crucial. And he said he will testify to this in court. So I think he's telling the truth. So with that, folks, we're going to wrap up today's show. Ben Birch at White Rose Society, I do believe, is still running his fundraiser. Go by, do the right thing. Thank you to Agnes Kincaid for producing today. Wonderful job as always. To our bloggers and our mods, thank you so much. Hello, chat room. I'll pop in there in a few minutes. And thanks to Bob for announcing the program. Bob Kincaid is coming up next. And thank you to the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters for everything that you do for the horn. We couldn't be doing this without you. And as it wasn't a very green show today, folks, maybe we'll get back to regular programming tomorrow. So as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green, and we will see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that I pooped in my own dog dish. And sometimes I would rather face not eating than face licking it clean and admitting when I'm selfish. And I tell you that I'm suffering from the worst type of loneliness, the loneliness of being misunderstood. More poignantly, the loneliness of being afraid to allow myself to be understood. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that the personal revolution is far more difficult than the first step in any revolution. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that music is the expression of emotion, and that politics is merely the decoy of perception.
Quality News Network. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and House Democratic leaders are attaching an Iraq withdrawal deadline to legislation providing nearly $100 billion requested by the Bush administration for the Iraq and Afghanistan campaigns and money to expand health care. The Democrats are proposing the redirection of resources to the war against al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan, quote, no matter what, Pelosi said. By March 2008, redeployment begins, and by August 2008, it'll be completed, according to this bill, end quote. General Petraeus said in Iraq today that it was critical that alienated groups, even insurgents, be brought into talks, and he believes violence can be curtailed. He was speaking after Defense Secretary Robert Gates announced the troop surge now underway in Iraq will be supplemented by an additional 2,150 military police because of an anticipated increase in arrests. The UN Atomic Watchdog Agency approved major cuts in aid to Iran today as part of sanctions over suspicions that Iran is trying to build a nuclear bomb. Iran shrugged off the punitive action and showed no signs it was cowed by the possibility of even tougher sanctions. Sinn Féin leader Jerry Adams and the Democratic Unionist leader Ian Paisley, along with his deputy Peter Robinson, were the first to win easy re-election in Northern Ireland today. At stake is the central dream of 1998's peace accord. Counting is to finish Friday. The U.S. Coast Guard is staging a huge exercise in Florida in preparation for a possible mass exodus from Cuba in the event of the death of Fidel Castro. President Bush is going on a five-country tour in Latin America today. This week he announced an increase in humanitarian aid funding to the region. In Mogadishu, at least 12 people were killed today in clashes between African Union troops and Islamic rebels. The death toll in Indonesia's 6.3 earthquake earlier this week has risen to 73. More than 430 remain hospitalized. Hundreds have been left homeless. Today is International Women's Day. Commemorations and conciliatory gestures are taking place around